This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Hello, this is Amy Harrison, and you're listening to Hit Publish, where I cover simple ways to get better results with your online business. This week, I've got something a little bit special for you. It's an interview with the godfather of content marketing himself, Joe Polizzi. Joe is the founder of Content Marketing Institute, and I'm excited about this episode because he shares some superb advice that will set you up for content marketing success in 2016. What I loved about doing this interview is that while a lot of content marketing advice can seem like this never-ending stream of items on your to-do list, Joe explains why your success this year is based on less is more. Feel free to breathe a sigh of relief, but do grab a pen. Your mind is going to be inspired, wired, and ready to go after you hear what Joe has to say. As always, I want to thank you for downloading this podcast, and I want to thank Rainmaker FM for hosting it. So are you ready to rock your content marketing for the year ahead? Let's hit publish. Hello, come in. Now, today is a special episode. I've invited Joe Polizzi from Content Marketing Institute to the Hit Publish headquarters for a bite to eat. As you can hear, I'm busy prepping, getting things chopped. Let's just fire up the cooker here and get these boiling nicely. It's a bumper episode. As you know, around here, we do things bite-size, not unlike my cooking. Whilst most Hit Publish shows are around 15 to 20 minutes, talking with Joe was so informative that the interview itself runs at around 40 minutes. So, in addition to trimming some leaks, we're trimming out a couple of bits from the show to make way for the great advice Joe has been kind enough to share. For this week, we're going to chop out the previous comments, Dear Amy, and the word of the week, but don't worry, like a weekly special, they will be back on the menu next time. Okay, things are cooking nicely, so let's just set the table, let's get some drinks going. Feel free to get yourself a snack or a beverage to enjoy. Just make sure you don't get crumbs or spillages on your notes because you won't want to miss what Joe has to say. Ah, here he is. Now, while Joe and I took into this tasty and very imaginary meal, here's the interview we did for you earlier. Tell us a bit about you and your content marketing background for any listeners who might be meeting you for the first time.
Oh boy. I started in this industry in 2000. I started working at a large independent business-to-business company called Penton Media, and I started in their custom media department. So our responsibility was to help large businesses, for the most part, B2B businesses, help tell their stories better. That came through as custom magazines, newsletters, webinar programs, and then on and later into the 2000s in blogs and social media programs. And did that until 2007. And then I had this itch to become an entrepreneur and start my own business. And that evolved into what is now the Content Marketing Institute. And my job is, as founder and CEO, is to go to any location on the planet and talk about content marketing and evangelize the practice. And I've written 4 books on it, and I blog I blog all the time on the concept, either on our site or on other people's sites. I've got 2 podcasts, This Old Marketing and Content Inc., and just anywhere that somebody wants somebody to talk about content marketing, I'm your guy, and I enjoy it.
These days, it's accepted that this is a good strategy to have. Have you ever felt frustrated, though, where you're just sort of waiting for the rest of the industry to catch up?
Well, when I started what is now CMI in 2007, it was a lonely experience because...
That's what I can imagine.
Paid media still, and still today, paid media is the majority of what marketers talk about. But especially in 2007, nobody was talking about content marketing and I've been using that term for a long time. And frustration that I had is everyone was calling it something different. They were calling it custom publishing, custom content, branded content. Customer media was big in Europe. And I was like, well, we've got to get everybody on the same page. So on April 26, 2007, that was actually my first blog post, and it was called Why Content Marketing. And I made the case for why we in the industry as marketing professionals needed to use the term content marketing. And luckily it stuck after a lot of determination and, you know, our friends like, you know, Brian Clark were you know, happy to get on board. I know Brian never really loved the term, but more and more people were starting to call it content marketing. And I would say probably in 2010 is where we really saw it turn around after we got out of the Great Recession. More and more people were saying, look, you know, we need to be more agile. We need to focus on building audiences. How do we do that? And of course, then they were looking at content marketing and using that as a core approach to search engine optimization, as well as social media. And but I have to tell you, Amy, I absolutely didn't know if it was going to work at all in the first couple of years. And it took a while. And that's the whole consistency part. And that's anything with, and, you know, if anybody doing content marketing has to realize that when you first start to build a platform and start to grow an audience, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And that's why the consistency is so important. Even with us trying to get the word out about content marketing, we had to be consistent with our blogging, with our communication, in order to build that audience and subscriber base.
Yeah, so it's not just enough to kind of take your flag and stake your claim on this works, this is good. You really need to be persistent and keep saying the same message again and again.
And again and again for the last 16 years. That's what I've been doing. It's paid off. And it just, you know, it just took time to get there. Patience is so key. And that's why small businesses in some cases have a better opportunity, because they can be and can afford to be much more patient. Take a maybe more of a rebel framework to content marketing, instead of where you have a large business just looking at what they might call a content marketing campaign, which is very short term, which doesn't focus on building long term relationships with an audience. And I think it's hurting a lot of businesses out there because they're thinking short term, when you have to think, hey, it takes time to build a relationship. You have to make sure you put patience into the equation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even the stuff that I've done, I know in the past there are channels that I've probably given up too soon on because I've thought, well, no, I'm not seeing, you know, the results. And then looking back and thinking, they were great early results. I should have kept, you know, and stuck at that channel. And I think that is a key thing, that this does take time and you're not going to see overnight success. Like you say, you've been at it for 16 years, but with that persistency and consistency.
Well, I mean, look at even Brian Clark, whether, you know, he's blogging for 19 months before really staking his own claim into his expertise area. And when we look at, you know, my new book, Content Inc., and all the case studies in that book, the average time to monetization, so the average time of building that platform, consistently delivering and seeing results, between 15 and 17 months. So you could be onto something fantastic and you look at it at 9 to 12 months and you think that we're not making it, we need to do something else. But you could be so close to really seeing that turn the corner. So that's where, I mean, some people look at that and say 15 to 17 months, that's so long. But now in hindsight, I'm thinking it's really not that long if you're trying to build a business, because what we see is those people that start to grow an audience and actually build that, you're building future customer list. A subscriber base is your future customer list. And once you have an audience that knows, likes, and trusts you, you can pretty much sell them anything you want. After that point, it just takes that time to get there. And then we see those businesses grow much faster, whether you look at a copy blogger, a HubSpot, a Moz that built that audience up front, and then they grow ridiculously fast. People are like, wow, how do they do that? Well, they do that because they have hundreds of thousands of subscribers that already know, like, and trust them, that are willing to try their products and services because they do trust them, and that's because of their content marketing approach in the first place.
What should small business owners be doing at this time of the year when it comes to thinking about the content creation and content marketing for the year ahead?
Well, what I think is happening in 2016 is that we really are getting to the less is more focus on real quality content to a very targeted audience and not just spread content every possibly can. I think that's what a lot of brands, a lot of small businesses have done over the past few years. Are like, oh, here's the story we want to tell, and we are going to throw up all over the internet everywhere we possibly can with this content. And it's actually not a successful proposition. It's better, and my recommendation would be, focus on one key content type for the most part. Is it audio? Is it video? Is it textual? Focus on one key content platform. Is that your blog or website? Is that iTunes? Is that YouTube? then consistently deliver. And when I say consistently, I mean, if you say you do two blog posts a week, I'm going to say, no, you don't. You do one blog post and you release it Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. And you release one on Thursday at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. And you do that consistently, and you set an appointment with your audience. And a lot of businesses don't do that. They're just, you know, the content goes out when it goes out. But if you look at any great media company, whether it's an old media company like the New York Times, or whether it's a new media company like a BuzzFeed or a Vox or a Vice, they all consistently deliver for the channels that they're focusing on. And then the last portion of that, you know, kind of 4-point process would be the patience that we just talked about. You have to take the small wins up front, whether that's, you know, web traffic, whether that's social media shares, build that into subscribers over time. And I think that will work for small businesses instead of just saying, oh, I've got to be on every possible platform doing everything in social media and Snapchat and whatnot. I'm like, no, you don't. Let's focus. Let's do what great media companies have done for a long, long time. One content type, one key platform, and consistently deliver. And that's what I think if you're a small business, you focus on doing that and you push all that other little stuff to the side so that you can be great, be expert in one key content niche, one platform over time.
I really like that. I really like the idea of thinking of yourself as a media company as well, because it's almost as though, you know, you look at the magazines that you like to read or any kind of monthly magazine that's been going for years. You know, Cosmopolitan doesn't come round a month and go, oh, well, no, maybe we won't get it out this month.
Exactly.
We sort of missed it. But that is, you know, if you want to look at the power of audience, look at the people that have been doing it for years and years and years.
Like it or not, we're all media companies. And yeah, that's why I think it's so funny. We think that because it's so easy to publish today that we should just publish anywhere we can. And that's not true. For some reason, we just thought, oh, now we've got all these platforms and we need to publish and we need to be where our audience is at. And yes, we do. But the media business model that has been going on for the hundreds and hundreds of years hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It's still the same, whether it started from print, whether it's events, now into digital and social. It's always the same. And that's why I even talk about the new media companies like your, you know, BuzzFeed, Vox, and Vice. They've done it the exact same way that New York Times did it, that Washington Post did it, that ESPN did it. And it's just for some reason we forgot that along the way.
Joe says it's important to be consistent and not to think of yourself as a business that publishes content, but as a media company building an audience of people who like, know, and trust you so that they are a hotbed of prospects that love buying from you. The key to building this audience, it isn't fancy technology, it isn't being everywhere at once, it's keeping the promise to your customer that you're going to show up at a set time, every time, just like a media company. And thank you for watching the AMI TV All-Around News and Entertainment Show. We'll see you the same time next week. Be there. Wow, that was an amazing show. Oh, I can't wait until next week. 1 week later. Hey, Amy, oh, you've got to come over and watch this show. I discovered it last week. It's just about to start. Okay, well, let me just get a cup of tea. Welcome to another episode of the AMI TV All-Round News and Entertainment Show. On to our first segment, as always, which is fascinating and interesting news. We head to our reporter, Amy, out in the field. Amy, what do you have for us today? Hmm? Oh, right, yes. News. Well, gosh, is it that time already? How quickly the week come round? It's just that I've really been up to my eyeballs in it, so I don't really have anything for you today. We've got 10 minutes to fill. Right, I wish I had something. News. I mean, do you want me to just grab a newspaper and read the front page? No, that's okay. Let's just go over to Amy 2, who should have an entertaining segment of song and dance for us. Amy 2, take it away. Oh, you wanted me to learn that routine for today? I remember now I was going to, but then I got this last minute job and just took up all my time. I could improvise, or why don't I just do the same song from last week? Would that do? Amy, this TV show is awful. I don't get it. It was brilliant last week. I was really looking forward to it. Don't think I'll tune in again, though. Joe drums home consistently the importance of consistency. See what I did there? So if there's one thing you take away from this interview, as I am doing, it's this. To make your content marketing work, make a promise to your audience that you're going to show up and keep that promise. Now, more from Joe.
Well, I'm really hoping that the Hit Publish listeners are now, I can almost hear them breathing a collective sigh of relief, because the idea of one channel, that focus, is so much more appealing than that overwhelm that I'm pretty sure every online business has felt. It's like, right, we've got to be doing webinars, we've got to be doing podcasts, we've got to be doing them all. And then at some point we may actually get this content out there, but it's like a scattergun approach rather than, you know, the sniper.
Well, and it's completely fine, and you want to diversify at some point, but not in the beginning. So take ESPN, for example. I mean, they're the world's leader in, you know, sports communication and information. They just started really with SportsCenter on cable television, building that, you know, video in that channel over time, every day, consistently. They did that for a decade. And then they launched ESPN.com, and then they launched the ESPY Awards, and then they launched ESPN the magazine, and then they started doing events. That was after they built the audience. So if we first, let's build that audience that knows, likes, and trust us, and then we can diversify. And we did the same at Content Marketing Institute. Basically, the first 24 months, all we did was blog. We did nothing else but blog. Then we did Content Marketing World, the event. Then we did This Old Marketing podcast. Then we did Chief Content Officer magazine. Those were all after we built our core audience. And that's just, again, because I come from publishing, so this is just second nature that's what you do. You just don't come out of the gate and say, we're going to publish in all these channels. You focus on one, you build the audience, then you diversify.
I really like that. What would you say that some of the advantages of being a small business when it comes to content marketing are? Because, you know, I know a lot of small businesses sort of look at CMI and think, wow, those are the people that are doing it right. What can I do? Like, you know, I've got limited resources, limited time. Are there any advantages? What can they do that will really help them content marketing wise?
Well, the first thing is focus on one key audience. Let's say you're a small business-to-business company. If you are, then you have anywhere from 7 to 10 buyers, influencers, gatekeepers in that buying decision-making process. And what will happen is we'll say, oh, we're going to tell this story. We're going to do it. We're going to create a blog. We're going to do a podcast. We're going to do it around this. And they try to target multiple audiences at the same time. And if you target more than one audience at the same time, you will most likely fail. You have to target one of those. So not all, you know, 10, you have to target one. I don't know if that's the key buyer or it could be a key influencer, but that's the one that you target. Because as soon as you target a secondary audience, you're most likely irrelevant right off the bat. You can't be targeted enough. There's just too much competition out there. So that's the first thing I would say, is just focus on who that audience is and be the leading informational provider in that area. And that's the other thing is, take an honest look at the content you're creating right now. Is it best of breed? Are the emails that you're sending out, are they the ones that people are not going to say is spam or going to delete in their kind of morning dump of email? Are they going to keep that, say, oh, that's the stuff I have to read? And usually when I work with a lot of small businesses or I'm doing a presentation, I say, just take an honest look at your blogs and your webinars. Are they indispensable? Are they truly best of breed for that particular audience? And in 99% of the case, it's not, because we're just trying to do everything to everybody. So I would even say, let's say you're doing 3 or 4 initiatives targeting 3 or 4 audiences and not seeing the impact. I might say for right now, you might want to forget the 2 to 3 that aren't working and just focus on one and be great at that. Be the leading expert in the world on that. And to forget everything else for now. Once you become the leader in that area, to that audience, in that particular content niche, and the smaller the better, because there is so much competition out there, then you can say, okay, now we're going to do the secondary initiative. And I love, look at Huffington Post is a great example of this. Huffington Post has like 200, 250 different blogs on that site right now. But they didn't start that way. They started with one. To one audience, taking one particular point of view and one particular stance. And then they became the leader in that area. And then they started the second one. And then they started the third one. And that's how Huffington Post became a, you know, multi-billion dollar media platform. And we think that it just happened overnight. It didn't. They were a small company just like all the rest of us. And they just slowly grew over time.
It's really interesting because sometimes if you're an online business and you're looking at what's happening online, it can feel like things are moving really fast. And though you've got to get on all these new mediums and you've got to be doing all of this stuff, when in actual fact, if you look at, like you said, some of the big institutions that are having great success, they've started, there is time. Like, you don't have to rush out and get everything out now, and you'll get a better result. If you take that one thing, take that one audience, and invest in the time to grow it and to grow it really well.
Well, look at a company like a Red Bull, right? Everybody throws up Red Bull Media House as sort of the pinnacle example of content marketing. But look at how they got started in 2003. They were just a magazine. It was just a magazine called the Red Bulletin. They increased subscription to about 2 million people. It took them time to get there. They were experimenting along the way. And then as they were doing that for multiple years, then they diversified. Then they got into all the video stuff and they had, you know, the guy jumping from outer space and all that. That all happened later, but they built that audience first. And for some reason we forgot, we just think that, oh, that was Red Bull Media House. Wow, that's amazing. I couldn't do that. But they started just like everyone else did. And so you just start very simply and, you know, get your team together, you know, figure out, experiment what works, what doesn't work, but just, you know, focus on that audience, focus on that content niche. And then once you build that audience, then you can start to dabble in all those other areas.
No, you mentioned there about the content has to be best in breed, and you ask people to take an honest look at their content and ask if it is indispensable. And I know that you rally against horrible or mediocre content. I've heard you talk about that before. How do you recognize horrible or mediocre content?
Well, actually, it's what's interesting about that question is a lot of people say, oh, you know, where do most people fail? Is it because of the in itself? That's actually not true. Normally, the content is at least satisfactory enough that you could possibly build an audience. Where it breaks down most of the time is consistency. It stops or it spits and starts. That's where the breakdown happens. So you may actually say, oh, we have a really good story here. We are making an impact. We are changing lives with it, but we're just not doing it consistently enough like a media company would. And when we go into even the largest, we work with mostly really large enterprise brands, and that's where they fall down because they think of everything as a campaign. We're doing this 3-month thing, and they start building an audience, and everybody gets excited, and they're really making some impact, and then they go on to the next campaign. You're like, what did you do? You were building an audience here and then you stopped and now you're doing something else. And I think that's where small businesses are. They're horrific at it. They're like, okay, well, the blog needs to go out today. Well, you know, Bob's in charge of the blog. Well, Bob's not here. What do we do? Well, I guess we're not doing the blog post today. We'll do it tomorrow. Oh, sending content is a promise to your customers. And if you break that promise, you will probably not get that audience member back. So the biggest thing is consistency. A lot of it is still, of course, self-serving content. They're still talking about their own brand, their own products and services, features and benefits. And we've got to realize customers don't care about us. They care about themselves. You've got to focus on the audience outcome. What's in it for that audience? Every piece of content has to focus on that. And a lot of times we're still getting a lot of this bait and switch where they'll start with something valuable. And then at the end, of course, you feel it coming. Here's the product pitch. And you've got to keep that product pitch out of the content itself because everybody smells it coming a mile away.
Yeah. So consistency is obviously key. And that's something that small businesses or any business really might fall down with their content marketing. What are some of the other likely causes of content marketing failure so that people can prevent it or spot it and correct it?
I think in a lot of cases, there's no point of view. I think that if you're going to build an audience, you want to make sure that it's not for everybody. You actually have to take a stance. If you're just riding the middle ground and you're, let's just say, you know, how to this and how to that, and you don't have a specific stance on how things should be in that particular industry or that particular idea, it's going to be vanilla content. It's not going to stand out. So you want to play one side or the other. I mean, bring that authenticity into it. What's your tone? What's your voice? And what is what really tells the story. And not only, I mean, you want to show people that you're a rock star, not tell them you're a rock star, right? So you show them by actually bringing that point of view out into that. So I think there's so much of that content out is just like everyone else's. And that's actually another really good project that I would, little exercise that I would work on if I was a small business, is really take your content, take your blog posts, take your podcast, and put them up against the competitive set. Is it really different? Could you take that blog post, remove your blog, and put your competitor blog, would anybody notice? And the answer is probably not. Nobody would know it. It's coming from you. And you really want to get that feel that if somebody's reading and engaging in that piece of content, they really feel like it's coming from your company. And that's not happening in most cases, because a lot of we almost want to please everybody with our content, and you cannot do that. You really should focus on, here's the audience we're going after, and we know that 90% of this other audience isn't going to like that, and that's okay. Let's focus on the 10 that we really want to make an impact with and forget about the rest.
I really like that idea of putting it against your competitors and seeing, would yours stand out? Would yours be recognizable? Originally trained as a screenwriter, and one of the things that our tutors would tell us is that if you've got a page of script with dialogue, you should be able to cross out the character's name and still be able to tell who's speaking, because the voice should be that distinct. And it sounds like in this day of, you know, of storytelling and wanting to stand out, that absolutely applies to the content that businesses are putting out there.
In information, sending out information is very different than telling a story. And in a lot of cases, their companies are just putting out information. They'll say, oh, there's nothing wrong with this. Oh, here's all our customer questions, and we're going to answer them. Well, answer them in a unique way. Don't just answer them. And I think that's what happened in, let's say, 2006, 7, 8, where you just had a lot of companies that were like, oh, great, long tail keyword search. Let's just answer questions. And you know what? Google rewarded those companies for a while, but not anymore. I mean, the days of the 200, 250 word blog post that's going to focus on one keyword is not working anymore. So what does work, it really focuses on, you know, helping that audience with a specific need. And I guess that's another thing, Amy. It's just, is every piece of your content filling a need? Mm. And another really good exercise would be, if you're putting your editorial calendar together and you go through, okay, here's the blog post, here's the keyword that we're here's the approval process, all those types of things. That's fine. But add to that editorial calendar audience outcome. Like, what is in it for the audience? Are you trying to help them live a better life, get a better job? What are you trying to help them do with that specific piece of content? And if you give that as like part of a brief to your content creator, you will save so much time in the editing process, because they already understand what the goal of the story is. The goal of the story is not to sell more Swiffer pads. The goal of the story is to have that audience do something, change their behavior. And if you don't know that as a content creator, what that thing is you want them to do, it's going to be a killer on the entire editorial team, because they're going to have to shift that story. So right off the bat, you'll get return on investment if you just make that little change in your editorial calendar so the content creators know what they're doing.
It's like a shift in perspective. Rather than the goal be, well, we need to have a blog out today, it's about that change in reader behavior. Like you say, what is the point of this? Why would they want to read it? And what can they do that they couldn't do before they read this piece of content?
It's an easy thing to do, but most companies they don't do it, because again, we're thinking very tactically. We've got to get the blog out today. Yeah. And what we need to think about is, what's this long-term story that we're telling to this audience, and what are we trying to help them aspire to be? It's all about that audience, and we know if we focus completely on that audience, they will know, like, and trust us, and then later in the process, we'll be able to sell them something or whatever you're trying to sell them, product, service, feature, benefit, whatever the case is.
Now, I know I've heard you talk before about how important processes and strategy are. For a small online business, what kind of processes would you expect to see them to set them up for success with their content marketing?
I think that there's not one way to do this. And you've seen this, you've had a lot of guests, you've talked on your podcast. So there's different ways to do this. There's not just one way. So I don't want to say that this is the only way to do it. The one thing that I would focus on, and we call this in the book, the content tilt. The content tilt is, I think, the most important thing as part of the strategy. And this is way before you start doing what we were talking about before, building the base, you know, the one content type, the one platform. That's secondary because we don't even know what the story is we're telling yet. The content tilt is where we want to find an area of little to no competition out there where we actually have a fighter's chance to break through. That's a different, we got to tell a different story to get there. And I think that's where most small businesses, they just fall off right away because they're telling stories just like everyone else. So we've got to figure out what is that area. And that's where we do some research. That's where you can use a tool like a Google Trends and figure out, okay, here's the keyword that maybe we're focusing on in some of our content. But what I want to drill down and see what some of these breakout terms are that aren't being covered as well on the internet or in other storytelling that we can make an impact, that we can take the leadership stance in. So I would almost say before you go and start to create any more content, really figure out, okay, what is that content tilt? And you might have to go really deep. So if you're, let's say you're a pet supplies company and you want to say, okay, I want to launch a blog on pet supplies. I'm going to say there's no possible way you're going to be successful because of the fact that there's just way too much competition in that area. I mean, Petco and PetSmart and 100 other businesses are spending billions of dollars in that area, and it's going to be very difficult for you to break through. So you have to figure out, okay, to that particular audience, what can you solve better than anyone else? Or if you're, let's say that you have high margin products with people that like to travel with their pets. Well, then you can talk about pet supplies for people that like to travel with their pets and maybe even go more. Maybe it's not pets. Maybe it's dogs. And maybe it's not just travel. Maybe it's travel and recreational vehicles. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, we're just spitballing here. But that's how niche that we would go. So if you've gone for most companies would say, oh, we're just going to do the blog on pet supplies, I would say, you're not going to be successful. Let's get really, really niche and say, okay, we're going to be the leading resource on the web for people with dogs that like to travel around Europe, whatever the case is, in recreational vehicles. You know what? You can be the leading expert of the world in that. Focus on that. And then focus on, then once you get to build that audience, then you can focus on products and services specifically to that audience.
And that's when you start to see businesses have a really distinct voice. And also it makes it easier for your content because you know what you write about, you know who it's for, and you can really start to have fun with the content because you've got a much more narrow focus.
And then the other thing I would say when we talked about the mistakes that small businesses make, it's right along the lines of our conversation here is, and this is the one thing that I regret more than anything else, is I didn't focus on building a subscriber database early enough. In the beginning, we were looking at web traffic, we were looking at social sharing, but I didn't look at the one key metric. And the one key metric is the subscriber. The subscriber, we want to build an audience. I mean, if in the purest sense of what content marketing is, it's about first building an audience. People think that the asset is the content. The asset is not the content. The asset is the audience. The content gets you to the audience. But we're not thinking, like when you look at a New York Times, right, and you do an analysis of the value of that business, they don't say, well, New York Times is valuable because they have 1 million articles on the web. That's not value. You know what? You know how they're valued? They're saying that New York Times is valuable because they have millions and millions of subscribers that they monetize in X amount of ways. So that's where we have to focus on. If we are looking at any metric, we want to make sure that if they're coming to our site and coming to our content and our platform, that we want to make sure we get that direct connection with them. We get their permission to communicate with them on an ongoing basis. And that's why everything that you focus on should be the email subscriber, way over and above any of those social media connections you get. Because as you know, and you talk about as well on all your podcasts that you have in the network, social media connections are fleeting, especially because you can't control them. You have no control. I've got a podcast, you've got a podcast, we've got these subscribers on iTunes, but the fact is that we don't have direct connection with them. You know who owns that connection? iTunes does. So we've got to make sure that we take this connection and how do we get calls to action and build our email subscription database so that we can build that asset long term. And that's where we have YouTube subscribers and Facebook fans and LinkedIn connections and whatever you want to call it. We want to move those people as much as we can over to email subscribers so that we can build the business on top of that.
So email subscribers, hugely important metric. Are there any other metrics that people people should be keeping their eye on to measure their success of their content?
The other metrics I would call lower level metrics. And, you know, the things like you have web traffic, which you can spin as good or bad in any way. Looking at a Google, I can look at a Google Analytics report and say it's good or bad. I mean, even if it's going up or down, I could say that's good or I could say that's bad. Doesn't matter, however you want to spin it. Social shares, these are all good indicators. Web traffic is a good indicator. You know, of course, we want to look at conversion rate, but I don't want to look at conversion rates to leads. I want to look at conversion rates to subscribers because my leads are coming from my subscribers. And a lot of businesses don't think of it that way. They think of, oh, I want to get the content out there and I want to have them fill out a form and I want to get them as a lead and then I'm going to sell them. Well, that is a terrible way to do this because we want to build that relationship first. So what we want to do is have those conversion opportunities, get them to subscribe. And then once they engage in our content for a while, they start to trust us. Then we can say, well, is that, you know, are they engaging in the right content? Is that the right lead? Could that be a lead? Is it an opportunity that comes from our subscriber database first? Because if you're going to ask me, I mean, what is the ultimate question when it comes to content marketing measurement? I'm going to say, I want to look at what is the difference between a subscriber to my content and somebody that does not subscribe. Do they buy more? Do they stay longer? Do they talk more favorably about my company? Whatever the case is, because we can start to measure that. You can actually measure it. You can take that email subscriber database and then you can put that against your customer database and you can start to see the difference. And you can absolutely say that it has an impact on the business, similar to, you know, what Brian Clark did at Copyblogger, what we do at Content Marketing Institute. It always starts with that subscriber, knowing that then we don't want to sell them right away. Because we want to build that relationship and, you know, we know if we do that, they'll be more likely to buy from us in the future.
Are there any new technology or tools that are making content marketing easier that the listeners should know about?
Well, I mean, I mentioned Google for a small business. I mentioned Google Trends. There's really good tools out there like BuzzSumo that I would look at. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got things like Rainmaker out there, of course, that are fantastic. I would say, when you get into outside of the publishing of content, where there's a lot of collaboration tools, there's a lot of tools out there where you need to collaborate with your team ongoing. Some of those are free, some of those are paid. So a content collaboration tool with you and your team, getting approvals, that kind of stuff, whether it's a project management suite or just basic content collaboration, that's fine. I would say at some point, it does help to then look, when you're ready, it does help to look at a marketing automation platform of some kind, because then I can really start to tell the difference between subscribers and what they engage in and what really makes a good prospect or lead for my business over somebody that's not, because then I can say, see clearly who this person is because I've got their email address. Then I can say, what kinds of content have they engaged in? What has resonated with them, what has resonated at top of the funnel versus closer to conversion. And I can start to look at that, and marketing automation can help you do that. Then you integrate that in with some kind of CRM system, Salesforce, if you will, so that you can then easily or as easily as possible see what it's going to look like for the business and where revenue is coming from. Now, most small businesses might not be there, but ultimately that's what we want to do. We want to take our publishing content as we go. We want to integrate that with a robust email system, then into a marketing automation system, and then integrate that with our CRM system. So you can actually see kind of the value of the subscriber and the behavior of the subscriber long term and how that equates into business.
Yeah. So to start off with, there's a couple of key metrics that you can keep your eye on that you don't need a huge amount of technology to do. And then as you grow, it sounds like there's plenty of tools that will help you get more insight from the data and so that you can learn about your customer behavior, what's working, what isn't, and how that's affecting your bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, if you're starting out and you're let's say you want to do a blog, you did the upfront strategy and then you want to go do a blog, you need a content management system and an email marketing system.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. Then if you start to really build that audience, then you're going to want to progress into marketing automation and CRM.
Any great examples of content marketing that you've seen recently that really stood out to you as a company doing it right, doing it differently, that people should maybe go and check out?
Oh, there's always some good ones that I like. I mean, from the podcasting standpoint, I love what, you know, John Lee Dumas has done at Entrepreneur on Fire, you know, where he basically started a blog a day. He built that to over 200,000 subscribers. Now he's a multi-million dollar organization. He was able to start an audience and in 9 months really start to monetize that. And now he's incredibly successful. And he's done that through the podcast. And I was just on his show and I was podcast number 1159.
Wow.
So 1159 days in a row, John produced a podcast. He sends it out at 3:30 a.m. Eastern time every day. And talk about consistency. That's just amazing. So a lot of people might say, well, I can't do that. I don't have the resources for daily. Well, whatever. Well, let's look at an example like Jenny Doan. Now, Jenny Doan is with Missouri Star Quilting Company. So it started a very small quilting company and they create little quilting patterns and whatnot. So this is a very, very small ornate business. She started a quick quilting YouTube show a few years ago where every week, once a week, she would basically talk about, here's how you take this pattern and do things. And every week she would do this and she's become a rock star. So she started and it was very, very low tech, low budget YouTube series. And if you look at her, she's done one video a week for the last, I don't know how many years, 2-3 years now. She's built up over 290,000 subscribers on YouTube that she has right now. And her city in Missouri, she is like, they've created the Disneyland of quick quilting in Missouri. And everyone comes from all over the world to come and see Jenny. Jenny is a rock star. Every one of her videos gets 60, 70,000 views. She is a complete rock star. And all she did was very simple. She just focused on a need and a pain point. There was content that was not out there. People did not have an easy way to see how to use these quilting patterns. She put it up there in a relatively easy how-to fashion. She has her own personality about it. She did it once a week for a long period of time. And now I believe that Missouri Star Quilting Company is the largest employer in her city, and she's basically taken over the city. So they're buying all this property, and it really is becoming sort of the Disneyland of quilting. I love that example because any company can do that. Any company can do that. It doesn't take a lot of money to do. It takes persistence, time, and focus, and a real focus on the audience need. And I just love that, where you've got something like a John Lee Dumas, which is more of a new tech type of thing podcast. And then you've got something like Jenny Doan, which just said, I'm going to just do one video a week and keep doing it and doing it, doing it. And she's completely taken her very, very small business into a multi-million dollar enterprise.
Joe says that being a small business allows you to be more flexible, to work within a rebel framework. Because basically, if you're the head of a small business, you've got much more control. You have the ability to make decisions faster and move ahead with them. For example, here's a small business owner making a decision. Oh, I think I'll try this new brand of coffee. Now, let's play that out in a larger organization. Amy, thank you for submitting this proposal to change the brand of coffee that we have in the office. I've given it a lot of thought. It wasn't a proposal so much as a suggestion. That coffee's really nice. And I mean, if you give me some petty cash, I'll nip to the shops and get some now. I wasn't the only one to consider your proposal. It went to HR, who passed it on to a focus group of employees. Okay. The feedback was that not everyone may like this coffee. Well, people can try it and then they can always go back to the old coffee. There's plenty in the cupboard. But is that fair? Is it fair to introduce a new range, a new offer that some people may feel is not to their tastes? It's just coffee. Should we be diversifying our offer of coffee to employees this soon? I'd really like to see some more internal data and insight about who is drinking the current brand. Are people talking about it at their desks? Are they sharing the coffee by offering to make a cup for their colleagues? I just don't think we know enough about how people are behaving with the current coffee for us to change. Okay, never mind. But then this coffee could be a success. It could be just the thing we need to perk up our staff, to put caffeinated joy into their hearts. I don't know, I just thought maybe I've commissioned a committee who will do some further developmental work, and I should have an answer to you about whether we can buy this new coffee for the office in about 6 months. If you're a small business owner, don't be intimidated by what bigger companies are doing. Use your size, flexibility, and autonomy to your advantage. Now, back to Joe.
When we go into a large business, they have, you're dealing with 7 to 10 different product managers. Each of these might be doing $1 billion in revenue. They don't even know what the other product areas are doing with content. It's all over the place. It is a mess. They can't focus on one particular area because they feel they have too many product SKUs and too many customers. So they don't want to take a chance on just focusing on one small audience base. If you're, it's the David versus Goliath scenario is in play right now. Because you don't have to play by the same rules as a large business. You can move much faster and you don't need the resources. Content marketing may be the most democratic way to go about marketing today because you don't need a lot of resources. You use the resources you have and you don't want to actually create more content. And Robert Rose, our chief strategy officer at Content Marketing Institute, he says this all the time and I love this. He says, you actually don't want to create more content. You want to create the minimum amount of content with the maximum amount of impact. And I love that because it's true. Nobody says, oh, I really need to create more content. No, you don't. You want to create less content with more impact. And I think that's what we're going to see for the rest of 2016 is that kind of focus. And that's where a small business is going to really say, what can we be the best to breed at? Let's focus on that. Do that really well. Be consistent about it. And you'll see success.
Exciting times. So just a couple more questions. What podcasts do you listen to? What blogs or magazines do you read for inspiration, whether that be personal or business? What do you kind of enjoy consuming?
On the business side, obviously the Rainmaker podcasts are fantastic. I love what Jay Baer is doing in his podcast. I love the startup podcast from Gimlet Media is a really nice podcast that they do specifically for entrepreneurs. We talked about John Lee Dumas. So from a podcasting standpoint, from a blog standpoint, I usually the one blog that I generally read at least every other day is Seth Godin's podcast or is Seth Godin's blog. It's short. It's to the point. I get one little nugget out of it and go. But most of my ideas actually come from non-business related books. Like I love Robert Heinlein. So Stranger in a Strange Land is one of my favorite books. I'm reading Glory Road right now. I love The Martian. Andy Weir was the author of that. It's a great content marketing approach, the way that he actually got the movie deal for The Martian. Andy Weir's going to be one of our guests at Intelligent Content Conference, our event in March. So I'm super excited about that. But I think you need to almost get yourself outside of some of the business stuff and you really need to just read great stories. How do they captivate the audience? How are they focusing? How are they telling stories? What makes sense? And so that I love doing, one of my goals is at least one book every month has to be a non-business related book. So I tend to go towards science fiction when that's the case.
And speaking of books, you have written a fair few on content marketing. So which of your books would you recommend? You've got a small business owner, they're thinking about 2016, they're thinking about content marketing. Which of your books should they read first?
Well, it's not even close because the first three books are all for enterprise marketers. Epic Content Marketing I wrote in 2013. That is like the guide for enterprise marketer, if you're marketing a large business. Content Inc., which was released in 2015, that is specifically for entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses. And we have a 6-step program, which we call the Content Inc. Process. And what we did is we interviewed all these companies from all over the world who became multi-million dollar properties. And they did that by building an audience first and focusing on products and services second. And that basically, those 6 points is how we reverse engineered the model. Every company that we targeted, every company that we did a case study for, they all followed the same 6 steps. Didn't even know they were following the same. They just did it. And that's what I love about that model, because I think we found a model that you can go to. If you're a small business, you have limited resources, you can take that model and you can really leverage that for your business as long as you're patient. I think it will work for you. So it would definitely be Content Inc.
Superb. Thank you ever so much for your time, Joe. Where can people find out more about you?
ContentMarketingInstitute.com is the business site. I'm at JoePulizzi.com, and then I'm always available on Twitter at Joe Pulizzi, P-U-L-I-Z-Z-I.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy. Appreciate it.
So here's my question to you. How can you apply Joe's advice to your content marketing success strategy for the year? What one format of content and what one channel will you be focusing your efforts on? What promise will you make to your audience? When are you going to show up? How often? Let me know in the comments. I'd love you to share your plans, your New Year's content resolutions. Let's get them out in the open and make a commitment to publish consistently this year. Thank you for being a quick-witted Hit Publish listener. If you found this useful today, I'd love it if you popped over to iTunes, left a rating and review. It takes just a few minutes, but if you do, next time you head to the till with something you want to buy, you're 82% more likely to find out it's been reduced even further. Savings! Don't forget, if you'd like to be featured in the Dear Amy column, simply leave a comment on the show page with your question or problem, or email me using hello@writewithinfluence.com. That's all for this week, so until next time, remember to take action and hit publish.